Right now, whether it's the Hodag in Rhinelander or an alien encounter in Eagle River, a lot of towns in Wisconsin and the Midwest in general have stories of strange happenings that people talk about to this day. Our next guest spent a year traveling the Midwest in search of these local legends. He found out that even if you can't get the answers you're looking for, there's a lot of value in just trying to find out. BJ Hollers is an associate professor of English at UW-Eau Claire and the author of Midwestern Strange, Hunting Monsters, Martians, and the Weird in Flyover Country. BJ, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, I skipped your most important credential, BJ. You founded the Indiana Monster Research Center, you write, when you were 8 years old.
Well, I didn't want to brag. We did have our funding cut pretty quickly. My mom immediately decided she needed the phone line back. So it was born in a closet in my childhood home. And then about 2 days in, we didn't get any calls. And so my mom took the phone, and that was the end of that chapter.
But it started a long fascination with stories of weird stuff, kind of on the fringes of what we know and don't know.
Absolutely. You know, there were a couple kind of key moments, I suppose, in my childhood that really got me hooked into this world. One was a crop circle that occurred in Paulding, Ohio in 1996, about 45 minutes from my hometown in Indiana. And my brother and I persuaded my mom to drive us there. And we saw this crop circle with our very own eyes. It wasn't on an X-Files episode. It was right here in a field. And that was sort of a moment when I started to think maybe we should look a little deeper into what's going on right here in our backyards.
Now, you did something unusual for an English professor. I think you spent a year, in effect, as an investigator of stories of weird legends, weird legendary creatures. You didn't set out to prove or debunk these stories. You just went on the hunt. What led you to want to do that?
You know, it was a lot of things. But part of the motivation was kind of the aftermath of the 2016 election. Folks were talking about fake news and post-truth era. And so I began to ask myself about why was it that our critical thinking skills seem to have been lessened or weakened in some ways. And so I thought by asking folks about these strangest things that often aren't based in much factual evidence and why folks believe in these stories, maybe we might learn a little more about why we believe in broader topics that sometimes lack the facts.
Before we dig into some of the particular stories you chased, what was your method? What did you set out to try to do?
You know, so much about what I like to do is to hit the road, to knock on the door, to talk to the stranger, and to let folks speak for themselves. And so there was plenty of armchair research along the way, and I looked at every written record and document I could get my hands on. But so much about this was earning the trust of people in small towns throughout the Midwest and letting them know that this was an opportunity for them to tell their own story, to tell their own strangeness, and then learn how these small towns approached these odd stories and what they did with them.
You tackle a bunch of cases. I want to focus in on at least a couple of the Wisconsin ones. And let's start with, this is kind of a well-known one, I think, the Beast of Bray Road in Elkhorn. One witness called it one of God's mistakes. First, give us the basic details of this legend.
Absolutely. Well, in the fall of 1989, a woman named Lori Andreese was driving home after a long shift at her job, and around 1:30 in the morning, she looked off to the right of Bray Road in Elkhorn, and she saw this brownish-gray-furred wolf-like creature kind of crouched on its knees, eating what appeared to be roadkill. And so this was only the first of many sightings to come. Every couple years, and certainly back in 89-90, there was a rash of sightings, but there would be this bipedal wolf that people were seeing that was apparently running down Bray Road and chasing after cars and really putting people, keeping people on their toes, so to speak.
And what kind of things did you do to try to investigate the Beast of Bray Road?
Well, I spent some time in Elkhorn, of course, and I spent a lot of time talking to kind of the local and world expert on it, Linda Godfrey. She was a journalist for the Elkhorn Weekly Paper back in 1989. Suddenly, she wrote one story about this alleged Beast of Bray Road, and since she has really made a career in investigating this and other strange phenomena. So we spent some time kind of going up and down Bray Road, but we also spent some time just talking about sort of the risks inherent when folks like us try to even engage in topics that are so strange to the general public.
Like what kind of risks?
Well, I think there are probably professional risks. And so I have to be very mindful as a professor. You know, I'm here to investigate, to explore, but not so much to make any rulings on these sorts of things. But I think as Linda says too, you know, the real risks are to the people who come out and talk to me to begin with. You know, I think oftentimes people, I mean, I guess the question is, when was the last time we were at our water coolers at work? And when people asked us how our weekends were, we said it was great. I watched the Packers. I saw a UFO. No one says that second part, you know, and there's a reason for that. So kind of looking deeper at why people feel so kind of tight-lipped about sharing these stories.
Now, people shared their own stories and, you know, they may have seen something, we don't know. But then there was a video that turned, I think this is the story where there was a video that turned out to really not be on the level at all.
It was not. There was a video clip that emerged. Allegedly, the footage was taken in the 70s, and it was kind of in this old reel-to-reel. And so it's really astonishing to watch from just kind of a Hollywood perspective. This person did a fine job of fabricating this footage, and I've showed it to my students, and we kind of go through it frame by frame. But in fact, no, it was not, in fact, the Beast of Bray Road. It was still fun to watch, still pretty eerie and pretty creepy, but it's just one more facet to the stories. You know, there are folks out there who are attempting to hoax or do what they can to get a little attention. But the beauty of this, too, is that most of the folks I talked to were very sincere about what they had seen. And in fact, were often very hesitant to speak at all on the record.
Talking to BJ Hollers, associate professor of English at UW-Eau Claire, author of the book Midwestern Strange, Hunting Monsters, Martians, and the Weird in Flyover Country. Another of the Wisconsin stories you share, I don't think I'd seen this one before, Joe Simonton's Space Pancakes in Eagle River. Tell us about this incident.
One of my personal favorites. So in April of 1961, a man named Joe Simonton out of Eagle River was washing his dishes one morning, and allegedly a spaceship, a flying saucer of sorts, landed in his backyard. Some aliens stepped out. He described them as looking like, quote, Italians. Not sure what that means, but these aliens stepped out and they handed him a vessel. Apparently they needed some water, so he got them some water, handed it back, and in exchange for the water, one of the aliens handed him four space pancakes. So pancake-like looking food. And so what do you do when someone hands you a pancake from outer space? You got to try it out. You didn't want to be rude. So he ate it, which was pretty odd. And then the story gets stranger still because the Air Force intervenes. They commandeered the remainder of these pancakes. They did some testing. Food and Drug Administration gets involved. And perhaps one of my favorite findings of the whole book is that after all the tests, it is determined that these pancakes were, in fact, of terrestrial origin. So maybe they weren't from outer space after all.
I love this story because it has two of the most, like, you think people will have these really outlandish details about their alien encounter. And in this one, the aliens look like they're Italians and they give him pancakes.
It's so grounded in our world in so many ways. It really is silly. Another kind of silly facet to this story is when Joe Simonton finally got the floor to speak, he said, you know, I really want to set the record straight about some things. And everyone's expecting him to talk about what he'd seen. And he takes that opportunity to say, I am not a chicken farmer. It has been said that I am a chicken farmer. In fact, I am a plumber who happens to have some chickens. And so I love that this is his kind of like major stand he's taken against the press. He's perfectly fine with people talking about his alien encounter, but he will not be called a chicken farmer.
Now, people have a wide variety of stories. And you share a lot more of them in your book. And some of them are just flat out hoaxes. Some of them are people who clearly believe what they've seen, others who are following up to look at it. But you take some lessons about our sense of wonder in the world. What after spending this time actually hitting the streets and investigating these stories, what kind of things did you learn about our sense of wonder?
You know, that's a great question. And certainly there are some larger findings about kind of the more scientific approach to why we see what we see, confirmation bias, psychological elements, pattern seeking things in the brain. But in our hearts, I think there's something happening too. You know, a long time ago, my students who were just fed up with me for asking them to write these persuasive essays said, well, we want you to persuade us of something. And I said, all right, well, what should I persuade you of? And they said, prove the existence of Bigfoot. And this was a huge challenge, you know, and I eventually was able to kind of rhetorically make some kind of argument that Bigfoot may not exist. So kind of doing some wiggle maneuvering there. But along the way, I realized that it's just a lot more fun to live in a world where we don't know everything. And you can kind of make an argument for a possibility, even of a creature like Bigfoot. In 2008, we thought there were only 50,000 lowland gorillas anywhere in the world. And just 50 miles off the nearest road in Africa, we found 125,000 more of them. So you hear stuff like that and you think maybe there is a Bigfoot or two out there. And it's worth wondering about, if nothing else.
You also, at the outset, said you were thinking about what we think about truth and lies and fake news. Did you learn anything in this process about those topics?
You know, I learned a lot, and it's hard to summarize. So much depends on the individual and also kind of the litmus test of what we see as our truth. But one thing I learned kind of more broadly is about folks in these small towns who did something really smart, especially in places like Rhinelander, who have their Hodag, or a place called Cherubusco, who has its giant turtle in Indiana. These people did something great, which was they embraced their strange. Rather than kind of shy away from their stories, they just embraced it fully. Now you can't go to Rhinelander without seeing the Hodag on every street corner, you know. And as a result, the town has more economic power, more cultural cachet. It really supports these small towns in a beautiful way. And to think all of this is because of a story of a creature that never even existed. It's just a lovely story about humanity and our ability to stretch the truth in playful ways, but also to be mindful of the ways we can also stretch truth in dangerous ways as well.
You mentioned the risks of people in professional settings tackling these topics. When you show up at a department meeting this fall, do you get any weird looks from your English professor colleagues that you were out hunting the Hodag?
You know, we just got done with the meeting about an hour ago, and I was expecting a few more looks. But you know what? I'm very fortunate to have wonderful colleagues. We all support each other pretty well. So maybe I'll just take them along for the next hunt.
Now, having gotten a taste for this, are you going to go back out legend hunting, or are you back in the armchair as far as this topic is concerned?
I'm in the armchair for the moment, but there's always more wonder out there to seek. And so I'm always looking for that next great story and hopefully to burn that tire rubber to find the next wonderful story.
BJ, thanks a lot for sharing these stories with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's BJ Hollers, Associate Professor of English at UW-Eau Claire. He talked with us about his new book, Midwestern Strange, Hunting Monsters, Martians, and the Weird in Flyover Country.